It is the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Milwaukee County ends a program that collects money from fathers to cover the costs of childbirth under government-funded health care. And the program applied only to fathers who were unmarried and had no custody rights to their children. As this birth cost recovery program sunsets, we examine the future of this form of government collections across Wisconsin, and you can join the conversation. Call in with a question, share your perspective, 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. Bryn McBride is Chief Operating Officer and Public Interest Attorney at ABC for Health. That's a Madison-based nonprofit public interest law firm advocating for health equity and social justice in healthcare. Bryn, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Good morning.
Well, let's get some working knowledge of this. Can you explain what your organization calls the birth tax?
Yeah, thanks. It's a complicated policy. It's one of those that most people probably haven't heard of. We call it one of those Medicaid policies that's a little deep in the weeds, the policy weeds, but it actually has quite a disparate impact. So just to break it down, it's a medical collections process. And a lot of folks probably think as medical collections usually stemming from hospitals, but this is one instance where a collection action actually starts from the county. It all happens when a pregnant woman is enrolled in Medicaid and is not married. The collection action is, like you described, it's an action against the father. We started learning about it many, many years ago because of the impact it had on the pregnant woman, on the mother. She's the one that immediately has to face a decision upon becoming pregnant and being enrolled in Medicaid if she's going to identify the father and therefore start the collection action against him, or refuse to cooperate and therefore be subject to a sanction. And the sanction is she gets her Medicaid taken away 60 days postpartum.
That could interfere with care, though. That could interfere with, prenatal care for if the mother fears applying for Medicaid, and revealing the father.
Absolutely. And that's really how we first started hearing about the policy. It's not something we were reading on the books, just academically. We would get a call from a social worker or a public health nurse or a home visiting nurse saying, I met this woman. She was at the emergency room to deliver, having had no prenatal care. What do you think happened? How did we miss her in this system of prenatal care? And we started just hearing anecdotal stories of saying, oh, I didn't want to disclose my boyfriend or my partner or the father's baby, and therefore decided to forego the healthcare coverage and therefore the care that was needed. You start putting all of the pieces together to figure out what is actually happening in this scenario, how many people this is actually impacting, how many people are pregnant and enrolled in Medicaid, and you start seeing that it's a much bigger problem than we first envisioned.
Bryn, your organization reports Wisconsin leads the nation in birth cost recovery efforts. What does that mean? What does Wisconsin gain from leading the nation in this area?
Nothing. There's no winning here with this policy. It's one that's extremely inequitable, which we'll talk about in a little bit. It's a policy that is discretionary. We had a chance to talk with the Federal Child Support Office, and we'll talk about child support's role in this in just a bit too. And they said it's discretionary to states, and most states have said we're not going to do it. States like Minnesota, some of the other states around Wisconsin said this is not in the best interest of children to put this mother in this catch-22 at the moment she's pregnant and seeking health care. That ends up having bad maternal health outcomes. It has bad infant mortality and infant health outcomes because of the risk of jeopardizing prenatal care and a good start to this baby's life. And then you have other states like Idaho, which actually had a Supreme Court case over this saying, on equal protection grounds, it treats men and women differently, and therefore they ditched the policy. Wisconsin has held firm to this policy. It's one of about 6 to 8 states that still pursues it. The collections actions, Wisconsin is the most aggressive, and Milwaukee is the most aggressive of all the counties. There's been some effort to try to get rid of it. Governor Evers, in his first budget, said, let's get rid of birth cost recovery. And then the legislature tossed that out of the budget. So there has been an effort statewide to toss this discriminatory policy, but it's still on the books. And some counties have said, we're not going to do this. We're going to take that discretion and we're not going to pursue these collection actions. But other counties have been quite aggressive.
And so from what I understand, Dane and Milwaukee County have recently discontinued the practice, although, as you mentioned, other counties are continuing. Considering these are the two most populous counties in the state, what implications will that change have?
It's big. It's big news. Across the state of Wisconsin, Wisconsin counties hold about $106 million of these judgments for which they're pursuing. That's about 80,000 judgments. About 80% of those are held in Milwaukee, Dane, Racine, and Kenosha counties. Even though, those only make up 31% of the population of the state, that's where 80% of these judgments are held. So getting rid of Dane and Milwaukee counties is going to take care of the brunt. I mean, Milwaukee itself holds most of those collection actions. I think Milwaukee has about 52,000 judgments, about $70 million. Dane County is under right around 4,000 judgments, $6.5 million. So that's the scale of what we're talking about for these judgments. But it's still going to be a process. These judgments aren't gone. This went through a budget process to say, as a county, let's eliminate this discriminatory practice. It kind of had a rocky start in Dane County, and it's been up for debate before in Milwaukee County. But finally, both county boards' supervisors in the latest round of budget negotiations did strike the policy. So it still has to be implemented. It still has to be rolled out. We still have to see how it's actually going to play out to cancel these orders, these judgments, because these are court orders that have to be canceled. And then, from there, make sure that other counties start taking action.
Talking about a birth cost collection system for low-income families, Bryn McBride is a leader at ABC for Health. That's a nonprofit public interest law firm. You can join in. Questions and comments are welcome at 800-642-1234. Bryn, you mentioned some rocky situations in Dane County as it makes a switch. In 2020, the county said it would discontinue pursuing new birth cost recovery collections. What happened after that policy switch?
Oh, it's so curious. It was again through the budget process at the end of 2019, County Executive Joe Parisi's budget. He announced effective January 1st, 2020, we are eliminating the discriminatory practice of birth cost recovery. That was the statement. And so what they actually started doing January 1st, 2020, was to stop collecting new judgments from January 1st moving forward. But all of those old judgments that happened before 2020 were still on the books, and they still aggressively pursued collection on those. So it felt a little disingenuous of saying it's a discriminatory policy moving forward, but we're still going to collect on the discriminatory policy that was moving backwards in time. What happened in 2020, again, the first year of the COVID pandemic, mind you, we saw that Dane County actually collected almost twice as much as they had in 2019. And part of the reason for that was aggressive collections actions, but also they were intercepting stimulus checks, unemployment bonuses. Some of the COVID relief coming in to low-income families was being grabbed to satisfy government debts. So that's what caught our when we did a several data requests from the state, from the county, to try to piece together what's happening. And we just assumed in 2020 we would see collections actions dramatically drop. And we were just floored when we saw that it doubled. So Congress then, that was the first stimulus check that Congress issued in early 2020. When they issued their second round of stimulus checks, they actually wrote language that said that you can't intercept these funds, that they are intended to go to low-income families. So it was just the first round of stimulus checks that the county intercepted. But that, painting that picture together, we did the data request, we saw the dramatic increase in collections. We started a conversation again with Dane County saying, let's fix this once and for all. Let's get rid of these old collection actions that you're still pursuing. We didn't hear a lot from the county executive office, but we did find some support on the county board of supervisors that had a both an equity initiative that they're pursuing, but also had an attention on getting rid of unnecessary fines and fees against low-income families in our community. And I think this struck a chord with them to say this is both discriminatory from an equity perspective, but also it is just one more example of a county charging a fee on a low-income family that needs to be investigated. So that was the Dane County scenario.
Do any of these funds that are collected by the counties through this process, do any of the funds, from the identified father go back to the family in some way to support it?
No, not at all. And that's such an important point, Kate. This is a state process. State agencies are the ones establishing the collection process. It's carried out by counties through their child support office, but it is absolutely not child support. It's carried out by the child support office because they have a mechanism for collection already established. So they're the ones charged with doing these collections actions. Not one penny that is collected from a father goes to support the mother or the child. So it is absolutely not child support. The money actually goes back to refund the state and federal Medicaid program. The county gets to keep an incentive, 15% of what they collect. We call that the county bounty. They're the collector, they keep a percentage, they have an incentive to collect, but it really goes out of that household and it diminishes the available funds in that household to actually support the family.
Bryn McBride with us, public interest attorney at ABC for Health. That's a nonprofit healthcare advocacy organization in Madison as we explore the impact of birth cost recovery programs in Wisconsin communities. You can be part of this discussion. Call in with a question. You can share your views at 800-642-1234. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. It is the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. The two most populous counties in Wisconsin moved to dismantle or limit their birth cost recovery system. We discuss the effects of forcing unwed fathers to pay back the Medicaid program for part of the childbirth costs. And you can add your thoughts to the conversation, or you can ask a question by calling 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. We have Bryn McBride with us, a public interest attorney at ABC for Health. Bryn, some Wisconsin counties like Racine and Kenosha continue collecting payments from unwed fathers when the mother is on Medicaid. How much discretion do counties have in pursuing these collections, these payments?
They have full discretion. It really is one of those policies. The edict comes down from the feds, it goes through the state. That says this is there aren't a lot of statutes that say you have to collect this money. It is discretionary. Some other counties, not as populous across Wisconsin, have said we're just not going to do this. There's no advantage to it. There was one corporation counsel in a northern Wisconsin county that said, I see no advantage for families, especially for children, of pursuing these. The reason some county have given for doing the collection action is purely revenue. They have said we don't want to lose this money source. This is an easy revenue source in our county. It's a different day, though. We're in 2024 now. The shared revenue makes a different situation for some of these counties. There are new personnel, there are new county initiatives on equity. And I think there's more data as well. We know what some of the racial impacts and disparities look like in some of our Wisconsin counties, especially Racine and Kenosha. We've talked about this as an equity issue. Then let's just kind of break down what that looks like for Medicaid births. About half of the births in the state of Wisconsin are covered by Medicaid. Of these, about 66% are to unmarried families. Black families are subject to this policy more than white families. The number looks like 88% of Medicaid deliveries to Black women are to unmarried women. The next highest racial statistic is 85% of Medicaid deliveries to Indigenous women is to unmarried women. And that's compared to 58% for white. So there is a Black, white, non-white, white issue here. When you start looking at some of the demographics of Racine and Kenosha County, you can see how this is a policy that's impacting Black families more than white families. The March of Dimes gave Milwaukee an F for for its poor health outcomes in their last report card. And they also name Wisconsin as one of the states with the highest racial and ethnic disparities in preterm birth. So there is a lot of work to be done in Wisconsin. And we're not suggesting that getting rid of this one discretionary policy is going to fix all of that, but it certainly is a really easy win.
Bryn, we're hearing from Jeff in Delafield, called in to ask that it's interesting that the recovery money goes to the state, but they're concerned about taking a mechanism away that discourages poor decision making. And Jeff is concerned about this program adding to the burden on taxpayers. What are your insights on those feelings?
You know, for us, the reality, and it's something we've heard before. The reality is that pregnancy is here. The woman is already pregnant. And now we have to decide as a state, what is our priority going to be? Are we going to support the unborn child and the pregnant person through pregnancy, or are we going to punish the pregnant person, saying, shame on you, you made a bad decision, therefore, no Medicaid for you to after your, as soon as you deliver. We've heard of people caught up in this policy. First of all, it's one that creates an extreme amount of stress in a home when a pregnancy is identified, and all of a sudden you have a conflict between the mother and the father saying, we have this collection action against us now, and you're stressing a pregnant woman. And we know the impacts of toxic stress on pregnant women, and of course, the stuff we already talked about deterring prenatal care. But we also see people that are culturally married but not legally married getting caught up in the policy. We see a father who is maybe out of the home because of work, who the state is considering to be an absent parent just because of circumstance, who was caught up in the policy. We've also met some young couples that were going to grad school, they were pursuing professional degrees. Their doctor worked with the family and, upon medical advice, said it might be to your advantage to start your family early because of the medical condition that the mother had that was degenerative. And they said, you know, we followed our doctor's advice and said, if we're going to start a family, let's do it now. Let's not wait. But then they got caught up in a collection action because of that decision. So, like I said, the reality is the pregnant person is already pregnant. What we have also started to learn is some of the consequences of child support cooperation because of this policy. So you want to talk about personal responsibility. Let's put our efforts towards collecting child support to actually support the parent and the child. There's new research that is suggesting, and it's early, but it is suggesting that when you eliminate birth tax collection, you actually see better compliance with child support.
I want to ask you, though, what are the consequences for fathers who don't make these collection payments?
Oh, just like disobeying any other court order or judgment. So failure to pay, they'll try to collect from the father. There might be a wage intercept.
Will they garnish
They certainly
wages?
do garnish wages. They
Okay.
certainly intercept tax returns. Like we saw in Dane County, if there's any other funds coming in from the feds, they'll try to intercept that as well. So it really does take the money out of the home.
Bryn McBride with us, leader at ABC for Health. That's a nonprofit public interest law firm as we talk about a birth cost collection system. You can join in questions and comments, 800-642-1234. Bryn, looking outside of Wisconsin, new laws in Louisiana and Utah require fathers to pay for at least half of their child's birth costs. Would you support requiring payments from fathers and sending the money to the birthing parent?
Oh, what an interesting question. It still triggers back to the decision that has to be made by the pregnant person. The moment upon becoming pregnant and being enrolled in Medicaid, it's the difficult choice and the difficult consideration that the pregnant person has to make. Do I identify the father or suffer a consequence? And I think that decision would still exist no matter where the money goes. So it's I think what works best and what the new research is suggesting is let child support play the role of being that mechanism of one parent supporting the custodial needs of the other and taking care of the child. Get rid of the extraneous medical collections process that actually seems to deter any kind of support from one parent to the other.
How do counties decide how much a male father must pay?
There, it's prescribed By a state agency. There are a couple different methods for calculating the judgment, and some counties do it differently. It's either a percentage of the father's monthly income that is required, a percentage of a regional average, or a percentage of the actual cost of the birth. That calculation has actually improved over time. It used to be just a really ridiculous number. There also used to be a policy, if you go several decades back, where if they couldn't determine the father's income, they would impute income to the father. They would say, well, we don't know the exact amount of money you have, so we're going to just suggest that you probably have X amount of money, to $40,000 a year. And then they would base the recovery action off of that. That just was another whole debacle. In many instances, we were meeting women that said, I'm picking up a second job because I'm trying to pay the collection action because there's such a ridiculous judgment against my boyfriend.
We only have a few seconds left, but what are the next stages here, next steps that ABC for Health is working on this issue?
The first one is just a broader education. As these counties, Dane and Milwaukee, like we've talked about, are ending the policy, first, we're going to be a watchdog on that. They say they're ending in 2024. We have yet to see the implementation steps. We want to make sure this isn't slow walked and taking several years. This needs to move quickly. For the main reason is the first round of intercepts happens at tax time. So, there's going to be another 2024 round of government intercepts here. Sanctions are coming back after being paused during COVID. So we have women that could be facing the punishment sooner rather than later. So watching Dane and Milwaukee County make sure they implement it. Doing education to families to make sure they know that this is a fine or a fee that's being absolved and not their child support.
Bryn, thank you for joining us.
Thank you.
Bryn McBride is Chief Operating Officer and Public Interest Attorney at ABC for Health. That's a nonprofit public interest law firm advocating for health equity and social justice in the healthcare financing system. I'm Kate Archer Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show here on the Ideas Network.